to their throwing, get inside. Might have been a handball there. Sidel shot. Goal! DC United!
Valeri finds Dewsbury, and he goes to Rodney Wallace to try and work it on his left foot. Willie Valeri in the penalty area. Slides and it scores! What a finish by Diego Valeri! Here's Disco Rude. Oh, played it to the end. Landon Donovan makes it two. It's their scoreline again. Columbus 2-0. USA over Mexico.
Ravel Palmer to keep RSL alive. To deny Kansas City one more time. Can he do it? Palmer! He has it! And the trophy belongs to Kansas City!
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is another episode of Slash MLS Cast. I think that the biggest news of the week is that it didn't take us 6 months to make a new one. So yeah, we'll do some quick introductions. We have a couple extra people on today that you guys haven't met before, but as always, I'm Chris. My username is PatLanups11 on Reddit. Ian, hit it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm next in the alphabet. I'm Ian. My username is Aramaskarhu. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. I'm Josh, and my username is 97227ist.
And I'm Pete. My username is Punk Rock Pete, representing the Sounders.
I'm Bobby. My username is Rise From Ruins, and I'm a Philly local, support Arsenal in the EPL.
All right, let's get what we're going to do over the next few weeks leading into the preseason. We're going to do some interviews with fans of each team as we can come up with them. We're going to do kind of a preseason report on every team, hopefully. So if anybody's interested in talking to us about their team, if you haven't heard your team talked about yet, get in touch. But for now, we're going to start with Bobby, actually. We have a couple of things to talk to you about, Bobby. We have both a team report on the Philadelphia Union, good or bad as that may be, in your opinion. And we wanted to start off by talking about the MLS draft this year. You were actually there?
Yeah, I actually got to go there. It was held at the Convention Center, which is right on Market Street, right in Center City. So what's awesome about the Convention Center is the upstairs is where the draft was, and then the downstairs there was a bar. So
that's what's important.
Me and a few buddies met up at like 9 in the morning and just got some beers there with every other Sons of Ben. It was packed. Nick Sakowitz, whatever his name is, the owner of the Union, was there shaking hands. People from Harrisburg, City Islanders, a lot of local teams. So we started the day off by getting a few beers in, and then we were just kind of walking around, and some guy who is obviously with the Sons of Ben, he was wearing a skirt of scarves. That was pretty much it. He just had all Union scarves and all this crazy stuff. And he came up to us and he just said, "Do you guys want to carry a sign?" And we said, "Yeah." So we grabbed the sign and we just started walking up the escalators and walking up the stairs. And there was chants the entire way up. And then when we got there, they actually had reserved seats for us. We got this like little card. I don't know if it's reversed there, but we had our own seats, and it was really cool getting in like to the whole conference room. It was huge, and you just see all this stuff. Like, you when you're watching it on TV, it's just like you see the stage, you see them do the announcements, but you could actually see the owners and the managers sitting at tables, running across the room to do the deals and like negotiate and all that stuff. So it's cool to see it on TV, but you see it in real time when you're actually there, obviously.
Now, how many of the owners did you see down at the bar? Because that might explain a lot of questions people had about what their team was doing there at the draft.
I only saw the Union owner. I don't think any of the other guys were even going to risk going down there with all of us.
Did you see a lot of fans from other teams there, or was it mostly Philly represented?
Not in the field house. The field house was pretty much all Union support. That's the bar. But once we got upstairs, they of course put the Red Bulls right next to us, that was a fun one. We had a chant
for when you hold it in that kind of cluster of cities on the East Coast, I think you have a lot of opportunity for the other fans to show up too, so I think that's pretty neat.
Yeah. Well, right underneath the convention center is a train station. So anyone from like the immediate area can just take a train right in, and they're exactly where they need to be.
Were you hired by the Philadelphia Chamber of Commerce to promote the convention center? Is that what you're really doing here?
Nah, but I love Philly. It's my favorite city. I just love it. I'm proud to support my own town.
All right, speaking of Philly love, do you want to give us a little insight into what the team's doing in the offseason, what we can expect in the coming year?
Yeah. Well, pretty much the big news is that Freddie Adu is finally off our books. We were paying him around, I want to say, like $500,000 in wages for him to sit the bench in Brazil. Carlos Valdez, I believe, is off our books now, even though he's like kind of in limbo right now in terms of teams, because he was our star defender 2 seasons ago, not counting last season, and then he wanted a shot to get onto the World Cup for Colombia, so he wanted to go back to his country to try and get that. So we loaned him out. We were still paying for him, so that was a big hit. And then we got Cleverson on loan from, I'm not sure what team, but he was a Brazilian player, played for Man U, played in the World Cup with Brazil, won the World Cup with Brazil, and we were paying him around like $350K. So we freed up a lot of space in the wages, pretty much. That's our big news for the offseason.
So what was the deal with Cleverson last year? Why didn't he play, like, at all?
I wish I know. Hackworth's got something going in his head that made sense. I want to say that he was stupid for doing it, for not playing him, but at the end of the day, he sees them in training, and I don't see them in training. He was a little bit older, so he might not have had that stamina or just the overall fitness as everyone else, but, I mean, when he played, he generally did a pretty good job. I mean, he had that really memorable free kick. I forget what team it was, but it was right outside the 18. It was a big win for us last season, and that was like a big dry spell, and then we scored and won the game.
Right.
But yeah, I wish he played more. I really do, but I don't know exactly what was going through Hackworth's mind.
So going back to the draft for a second, how did the Philly Union fans react to all those trades y'all made for apparently all the allocation money that existed?
Well, we were all sitting there because we were supposed to have the second-round draft pick at first, and it was Chivas, I think, who had the first.
Well, we had the first.
It was DC. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay. So we're all expecting a second-round pick, and no one knew that we were going to get Andres Blake as a goalkeeper. That wasn't even an idea that went through people's head. So we're all just sitting there waiting. Everyone's really drunk because we were just at a bar and all the Sons of Ben go crazy. So we're just sitting there, and then we find out we got a goalkeeper. And literally everyone was just so confused. Like, you would expect there to just be like pandemonium, just craziness. But like, people were cheering, but it was just more of a what the hell moment. Like, did that really just happen? And then they played his highlight reel, and then everyone was like, oh, maybe this guy's actually pretty good and he's got something to offer. Yeah. And so that was pretty much the highlight of the day. Then we had the 6th-round pick, which we traded to the 10th, which we then traded to the 15th. So after that point, we had the first set of action, and then we didn't have anything. And it takes a little bit of time. Like, they gave them 4 minutes to make each pick. So after each pick, we were just sitting there waiting. They had a countdown going. And then we would wait some more, and then more. Right. So pretty much everyone started to turn off after the second trade, after the 10th pick in the first round. It was kind of just long and drawn out.
They just went down and headed to the bar?
Yeah, we did head back to the bar after the little break, after the second trade for the 16th pick.
So I remember there was some speculation I remember there was some speculation about all those trades. They wanted to raise allocation money to maybe get Mo Adu, and now that is kind of pushing through. How do you feel about that?
Kind of. There was pretty much the president of the union is either in England right now or he's on his way back, because that definitely happened. He definitely went over there to talk to Stoke City about him. But the The problem was that they were offering him around $1.2 million as a salary. And then you have players like, I'll just use Kyle Beckerman as an example. He's getting paid no more than $400,000 a year. Weigh Kyle Beckerman against Maurice Adu. Does $1.2 million compared to less than $400,000 really gauge how good of a player each one is? It's just, it was completely out of proportion. So now what the report is that we possibly worked out a deal for around $450,000, which is still expensive, but it's more reasonable. Because instead of taking that money we freed up from getting Adu, Kleberson, and Valdez off the books and giving that all to one player, we're using it a little bit more responsibly, it seems.
But at least that one player would have actually played soccer.
Yeah.
So that would have been
this guy is actually going to play
either way.
And our midfield is definitely our weakest point right now, just because Keon Daniel went out of form. Antoine Hopinot is a great player, not the most consistent. I don't think he's the most confident yet either. And we just, Brian Carroll's getting old. We're just slowly declining in the midfield more than we should be. So he'll be a big morale boost, I think, for the Union.
So you'd say, with his addition, do you still think the midfield is where you need to focus on making changes going forward, or do you think there's another weak point to look at this point?
I think there's definitely room for maybe one more attacking midfielder, because Adu's a defensive midfielder. We could definitely use a little more depth there. The wings we pretty much have covered with Danny Cruz, and hopefully Latu will actually play midfield instead of defense, because he did get started in defense one game. That was a horrible day. But where we really should be looking after that, I think, is our defense. We need a proper left back because we're playing players out of position. So I think if anything, maybe another midfielder, but we should really be looking at a defender now, a proper left back.
Do you think your opinion, you trade McMath, keep McMath for a year? What's your...
Our first round pick was Andres Blake. He was a goalkeeper,
right.
And first round pick isn't nothing that goes lightly. That's a big deal. They gave us another little pamphlet thing and it has every first round pick listed on it. So they get locked in history with that. But like I said earlier, there's two things that'll happen with the signing of Blake. It's either one going to motivate McMath to do better, or it's going to make McMath a little bit more pressure and he's going to decline and Blake will step up. And I really hope that McMath takes it the positive way and starts getting better, because at times he's been a disappointment to the fans and to the club, but I really think he's got the potential to be a great goalkeeper. He's only 22, 23, something like that.
He's younger than Blake, too, isn't he?
Hmm?
McMath is younger than Blake, isn't he?
I'm not sure. They're both young. They're both under 23. I know that for a fact, but... I don't know exactly.
If you wanted to trade for, your attacking midfielder or a proper left back, Zach McMath is a nice piece of trade make weight. Not make weight, but he's a nice piece of, you can trade for a marquee player for him.
But at the same time, we don't have another backup after that. I believe we brought in a Romanian goalkeeper who was older. I think he was around 37.
Okay.
But he never played. He only sat the bench. I think he really had a chance of ever playing, but I don't think we have him anymore. I think he was only on loan and now he's gone, so we can't even afford to get rid of McMath. We don't have any seniority in our goalkeeping. We have two, possibly three viable goalkeepers.
Yeah.
So we got to hold on to them at least for one season.
Mm-hmm.
Bobby, can we jump over to your striking situation and tell us kind of what the feeling in Philly is there?
On what exactly do you mean?
Well, I know that, with Jack Mack off to a hot start and then cooling off, there's definitely been some frustration. Obviously, he's a young player.
Yeah. I really hope that he gets his form back, because our other strikers, we have Connor Casey, who's a great striker, but he's only getting older.
Sure.
We have Latu, who's another great striker, but again, only getting older. and McInerney's the big, like, he was kind of our glimmer of hope at the beginning of the season, because we saw him playing. He was tied with Marco DeVaio for a while as the leading scorer, and then he just dropped off. So we're just, I mean, every Union fan just hopes that he can get back into form and start scoring goals again, because he's considered a prospect for the U.S. men's national team. He could be the next great striker, but there's clearly something missing.
All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, for those of us in the Western Conference who may not have followed your games as closely and mostly were looking at highlights, was it anything team-related? Was it a lack of service? Did anything change, or did he just fall off?
I feel like it was his finishing. I feel like he would get the ball in the right places, and I'm a referee also, so I see a lot of younger kids play. And what I like to call the freak-out moment is when a younger player gets the ball right in front of the goal, they're inside the 18, and it's right at their feet, there's no one on them, and they take a shot, and it either goes over the post wide, or it goes right to the goalie's hands. He would get the freak-out moment, where he doesn't have that confidence, where he's got the ball right where it needs to be, but he just doesn't have the right confidence to finish it. Because all you don't need to shoot a ball as like a bullet to get it in there. All you have to do is pass it into the corner, nice little pass away from the goalie. And he's just lacking that little bit of confidence in his finishing.
That's a really good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. All right, so projection time. Worst case scenario, best case scenario, most realistic in your mind.
Well, I didn't expect us to be as close to the playoffs as we were last season. Like, we were really only a game away. Like, we could have done it, but I didn't expect it at all. So we already exceeded expectations for last season. This season, we have to get into the playoffs. If we don't, then guarantee Hackworth's going to be gone, and there's going to be a complete overhaul on the team. So, everyone's goal is to get in the playoffs and obviously win the cup, but we just really need to work on getting that team cohesion back, because we're bringing in some new players, and some of our better players are leaving. So we need to start gelling together a little bit and just hope players get back on form to reach playoffs again.
All right. I think we are going to switch gears a little bit, but Bobby, stick around. Let us know any other thoughts you have as we go along. I think we're going to move over to Colorado now also. We have Pete, who apparently just flew in from Colorado. We're very professional that way.
Absolutely. I thought it would add a little bit of credence.
Going to give us a little bit of a preview on Colorado this year and talk a little bit about the USL developments there too.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, the biggest story in the offseason right now for Colorado is obviously the coaching situation. You know, you have Cabrera heads to Chivas and becomes the head coach there, and more importantly, after a long, drawn-out, worst-kept secret of all time, Pareja sends over to Dallas. So, you know, Colorado has had rumors here and there. Ives kind of threw some names out and, you know, mentioned Frazier and John Spencer, but no one is really giving any credit to those rumors. It's basically just Ives that's mentioned it, and there's really no strong indication from the club anyway that they actually have any chance. The only official name in the ring is their former captain, Pablo Mastroni.
Do they have a timetable on when they the season's beginning for all the teams.
Yeah, training camps are starting. It seems like that would be...
Do they have a timetable on when they're trying to hire someone by?
You know, they've been awfully quiet about that sort of thing. It seems like it's going to be Pablo. It doesn't really seem to be that it's more than, you know, just needs to be made official, but no one really knows. You know, they've kept pretty quiet officially from the front office. All of the standard, blogs and whatnot for Colorado, particularly Burgundy Wave, they've reported everything they can, but there's just not a lot of information coming out. And like you said, yeah, training camps are starting. So I wouldn't be shocked to hear an announcement this week. It kind of makes sense. He's a former player. It sounds like essentially they wanted to have some interviews, make sure that he's really on the same page as the FO and that, you know, he knows what to do with a young team that I think, like Philly, exceeded expectations last year. So, but I really wouldn't be surprised to hear that that was going to be the case. You know, they Colorado got a 2015 first round pick, some allocation money, and you know, had Preha's salary bought out. So it wasn't all terrible for them, obviously, but you know, it's time. It's time for them to make a decision and get to work on the season that's 6 weeks away. So that's pretty much the coaching situation. You know, we'll see what happens this week. Whoever it is that does come in is going to have some new talent. You know, in addition to obviously the top two Rookie of the Year candidates last year. You know, you've got some good additions. One that I know well, coming from the Sounders, is Mark Birch. I think that this is a highly underrated pickup for Colorado. I think that he can make, you know, a solid impact as a bubble player. You know, depending on injury situations, I think he has a chance at being a starter, if not somebody, you know, just outside of the depth chart. They selected him in the first round of the reentry draft. You know, it was a little bit more active this year than we've seen in the past, where teams will typically, you know, let players fall to the second and third round. And, you know, they went for Mark in the first round. Sounder at Heart basically does polls every year of the fans, what we all think of the players as far as impact, importance. And Mark Birch came in at number 13. So clearly we thought he had a lot to, you know, add to our team. Number one, he's got the best hair in the league. I don't care what anybody says. little Hitler youth, but other than that, he's got some great-looking hair. In addition to what he's bringing with the hair is, you know, Mark has a great left foot, especially for dead ball service. He can be a little hesitant using it in the run of play. He really needs kind of time and space to put crosses in when he chooses to, but they are pretty accurate if he gets that. You know, under pressure, he's not going to be as strong, and that's kind of where he falls in that bubble role. I'm not sure that he's... I'm not sure that Mark Birch, honestly, is MLS quality at left back, but he's certainly a good rotational player at left mid, where we, at the Sounders, ended up playing him a lot more. You know, he's not quite careful enough to be a strong fullback. He's a little risky for the position. It works out well playing in the midfield, but I don't see him playing left back. You know, I don't think that's where he'll stay. He's got good awareness. He's not really a defensive liability in the midfield, but he can be, you know, a strong rotational player, especially if Colorado, you know, goes deep in the Open Cup, that sort of thing. So I think Mark Birch is a great pickup for them. We also saw Marvin Chavez come in from the Earthquakes on a trade from Matiba Harris. I think that's another strong pickup. Chavez, he had a tough 2013, one goal, one assist after, you know, a much better campaign in 2012, but he kind of had a public battle for playing time, you know, and I think under the right coach and maybe in the right position, he fits Colorado's speedy strikers, you know, kind of what we saw them have success with last year. I think that Chavez is going to fit into that system better than Atiba Harris did.
Yeah.
Now, I think a lot of times in MLS, you see if you're not trying to actively improve your team, if you're not putting pieces together, you're falling behind, and I feel like that's what happened to DC last year, but Colorado might be the exception to that, because they had so much of their success last year was based on a lot of young talent, a lot of rookies like Irwin and Dylan Powers. How do you feel about those guys going forward?
You know, I think there is a lot of pressure on those guys. You know, it's tough to have so many young players come out and have such a strong year. DeShorn Brown, Powers, like you said, Irwin, those guys are going to be make or break for the Rapids. You know, they need to have the kind of year that they did last year and, in addition, see some maturity and some improvements. I mean, I can tell you from personal experience that attack looked absolutely crazy when it was clicking. I mean, they looked like, you know, some of the best striking in the league when they were doing well. So I definitely think that, much like last year, the young guys are where they're going to look for their success. I mean, you're right, they're adding pieces. Brian Mullen, right, long-term veteran. Everyone expects Brian Mullen to retire. He gets re-signed. So they do have some veteran presence out there to try to, you know, pull it together, but it absolutely is going to rest on the young guys in 2014 for sure. you know, they had a pretty good draft. You know, talking about young guys, they were one of the teams that was recognized as having a better super draft overall. They did some trades to have some better picks. They picked up Jared Watts, who was largely expected to be taken in the first round. So he came in a little bit late at pick number 33, but he's a pretty hard-tackling defensive option. In fact, the armchair analyst Matt Doyle called him a dark horse candidate for Rookie of the Year. So they're still looking at picking up young guys. I think we're going to continue to see a young team. And honestly, I expect big things for them. I would not be surprised at all to see them again in maybe the fourth or fifth spot in the Western Conference coming into a play-in round. Outside of that, for the Rapids, we also just saw the first intra-league loan, which I thought was really interesting.
Right.
You know, that rule was just added last year, and they're the first ones to take advantage of it. So they sent him to Houston, Tony Cascio, and got an international slot for it. It's a one-year loan, and it works pretty typical to what you would see in other leagues. You know, basically, Houston has full reign to do what they wish as long as he's not playing against Colorado. So I'm interested to see how that goes and if we'll see more of that, if it's going to be a popular option. I mean, I'm not sure how your teams have handled it. We've certainly had a lot of loans to lower division teams. I think that you'd probably see a lot more cross-conference loans. I can't imagine sending a young player to the Timbers or Vancouver or anything like that. You know, even knowing that he wouldn't play against you, it's maybe not where the team would send him if it didn't make sense. But I think it's really interesting. I'm definitely hopeful to see more of that in the league and see those kind of loans develop.
Right. Speaking of the lower leagues, you were there in Colorado for the, I mean, maybe, I don't know if you were actually at the announcement, but you were there while the announcement was happening that they're going to make their own USL Pro team that's going to start this year, I think, maybe?
Next year, actually. Yeah, it was kind of a funny coincidence. I happened to be in Colorado Springs, and worked out well for me. I didn't make the announcement as it was a little bit of a shock, but I followed it closely. So they're going to have another USL Pro expansion team. They'll start in 2015. The team doesn't quite roll off the tongue like you'd like. It's Colorado Springs Switchbacks FC. So the plural in Colorado Springs makes it a little tough. That's kind of a hard name, but you know they like to...
Switchbacks FC.
Colorado what? Springs Switchbacks FC. Yeah.
Too many S's, man.
Too many S's.
Too many S's.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick podcast break here so you can try to say it five times fast. And we're back.
So, yeah. Colorado Springs Switchbacks, 2015 USL Pro expansion, and there hasn't been any official announcement of affiliation with the Rapids, but I would be shocked to not hear that over the next year. You know, it just makes sense. They're only about an hour or so away, and, you know, they'd love to have an affiliation.
Yeah. Speaking of USL affiliation, Portland finally announced their USL affiliation with Sacramento, along with San Jose, who are both going to be affiliated with Sacramento FC. And
that's great. When you guys are such great friends.
Yeah, because we all really like each other a lot. No, actually, I mean, supporters. You know, aside from, you know, I don't think the front offices or anybody, you know. Anyway, I don't think that there's any institutional dislike.
Sweep this one under the rug, everybody. Everybody listen while he tries to pretend everything is great.
We're all friends out here on the West Coast. What happened was, and this is just the version of the story that we heard from people in Sacramento themselves, but they originally sought to have an affiliation with San Jose, befitting, because they're only a few hundred miles away from each other. San Jose originally was not particularly interested in following that up, so Sacramento went and talked to Portland. Problem being that Sacramento is in San Jose's catchment zone, which means that players that come up out of that area are supposed to go to San Jose. They can be signed as homegrown, etc. They're supposed to go to San Jose's academies. So it was a real problem. I think that maybe what happened was San Jose was so busy trying to get their new stadium deal sorted out and the chaos that was last season for them, that they might have just dropped the ball on it, but they seemed to regain possession of the ball and decide that they were going to block Portland's affiliation with Sacramento. And so now what MLS has done is to go ahead and say that both teams are affiliated, both teams need to send two players there, but neither team can send more than four players there. I really don't understand how this is going to work.
What do they do at this point if they have a player on the team that both teams are interested in that's not on from either other teams?
I think what happens is a member of the San Jose Ultras and a member of the Timbers Army will fight it out with switchblades for the rights to the player, and whoever has lost the least amount of blood wins the player's rights.
Do you want to let us know a few of the ground rules of that fight?
Yeah, it's the one from like West Side Story where you have to tie your wrists together with a bandana, and okay, an impartial referee will decide whether it's a blue or green bandana.
Can the circle of fans surrounding throw bottles?
It depends on whether it's in Portland or San Jose. In San Jose, that's allowed. Portland, it's not.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And this
so,
is called the West Side Clause, right?
That's yeah. It's how we settle things out here.
It is the Western Conference, so.
It's how we do it. I'm curious to see how it's going forward. I mean, that's one of the things that, one of the things that Portland's been slow to do is get good academy set up and get USL Pro affiliation. So I'm glad to see that they're moving in the right direction, but it seems like it's a half step rather than a full step. So we'll see how it plays out.
Well, what's the deal then with the Timbers Reserves? Because I know they play and a lot of people go to those games, and that was actually one of the few reserve teams that were working. What are they going to do with that?
As far as I know, they're going to keep it because those all, they're really, really popular. I mean, I think they average around 10,000 or 12,000 people at those games. So, I would assume they're going to keep it. And I think them only having a partial affiliation with Sacramento means that, they have to keep that for some of their younger players, people they need to keep, Matt Sharp. But I don't know, honestly.
But since they're dissolving the Reserve League, where's that team going to play?
Just against the Thorns. Probably just
okay.
I saw that the Whitecaps also announced an affiliation with Charleston this week, which I think is the one that has made the least geographic sense since we started the affiliation. I assume that the Whitecaps will be covering all airfare during the partnership there.
And then the Galaxy just announced that they're going to have a team that's going to start right now in 2014 and play the first game against the Sac Republic, I believe.
Wow.
They came out of left field.
Kudos to the Galaxy, I guess. Yeah, I was sort of hoping more teams were going to go the reserve team route. Because I know it's worked for Portland.
It's worked for Portland in that there are so many people who cannot get into Timbers games. It's not like they're wildly popular because people are just like, I love the reserve team. It's the season ticket wait list is like 12,000 people.
Yeah, I went to a few Columbus reserve games. There's a solid 40 fans there.
Yeah.
Making it happen. Not too well attended on this side of things.
Yeah, the Sounders have done nothing close to what Portland has done as far as attendance when it comes to reserves. But, we've had such positional depth that you can see a guy start 1 week, in the senior team and then play the next three games in the reserves, get called back up. So our reserve games can be exciting and surprisingly had a pretty bad season for the quality of players that were in our reserve team.
I remember when DC could say that.
Way back when.
I stop after you say they've had a surprisingly bad season, and you just end the sentence there.
Well, our bad season was sort of a surprise last year, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
It
was surprisingly bad.
Yeah,
I was shocked at how bad it was.
All right, let's talk. There's a couple more transfer rumors floating around now. There's only a couple days left in the winter transfer window. I think that snuck up on me. I don't know about you guys. But we still have a couple of U.S. players abroad with hints of transfer, and then we've heard some kind of down the road, I know, with Rio Ferdinand. We're talking you know, a trade further down the road, but we're still hearing rumors, you know, in this trade window.
Well, Chris, you jinxed it. Last week you said we weren't hearing anything about the Galaxy, and then now,
right.
Now they might bring in Rio. Yeah, but so there, I mean, that's
not... Here's the question. How do they clear space for Rio Ferdinand? Do we see Gonzalez going overseas, or do we see one of the other DPs either moving teams or taking a big pay cut?
I don't think there's a single Galaxy fan out there who would rather see Rio Ferdinand as a DP than Donovan Keane or Gonzalez, honestly.
Yeah. Or do everybody seems to think that Gonzalez is going to get picked up by a European team after the World Cup. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But if you give up Gonzalez and you replace him with at that time 36-year-old Rio Ferdinand, who looks about as fast as me these days, I don't see that working out all that well for them. I mean, that is a trade down.
Do you think it's a better marketing move than it is a on the field move?
Well, are you asking whether it's a Robbie Rogers?
Yeah, exactly.
You could get some Man U fans to come see someone who, you know, was good for them when they were really good. But it's not, I just don't see it making any sense from an actual on-the-field product perspective. You know,
well,
leadership, maybe, but he's lost a lot of his speed. He'd still be really good in the air, but I don't think bringing in someone for a year at the end of their time is actually what, you know, that's not a leadership maneuver. You know, you need somebody there for a couple of years to influence younger players and shape of the team, the style they play, etc. So,
is he gonna play for England in the World Cup though?
Nope.
No. Okay.
No.
Okay.
So the other question would be, I guess, would MLS be looking at adding a fourth DP slot at sometime in the near future? I think we've heard rumors of it with NYCFC coming into the league. I think they blatantly hinted that there would be some changes in the upcoming salary structures that could benefit the richer owners. Do you guys
Toronto
see that happening?
Toronto certainly hinted at that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they did as well.
Yeah, they're trying to raise the allocation money to pay basically their fourth DP, Matthias Laba. I hope they don't bring a fourth DP in, honestly. I think that'd be a misuse of resources that they could use on bolstering the back depth and mm-hmm. bolstering the academies and the USL teams. They might do it anyway, though.
So we've also seen people toss around the idea of having a US/Canada DP slot, kind of a local DP slot. Do you agree more with that system of doing things so we can keep some of the talent here and not overseas, or do you think that three should be the limit on DPs, period?
Well, it's tough because... it's tough from a legal standpoint. I remember we had a conversation last year where Dennis was complaining about how Canadians count as international players if they play for American MLS teams. And the reason that is based on U.S. law, you're not allowed to, if you're going to, like, job discriminate by nationality, you can only do U.S. versus all the other countries, and you can't include other countries in, like, you can't be inclusive of other countries for some reason. Canada is not that way. I guess I've got it figured out or something, but it'd be weird. That might be a weird legal precedent thing.
Well, and how much does that conflict with the lack of transparency on our retention funds and Garber bucks and all the other things? We don't really know how it works.
Yeah, and also getting a fourth designated player in doesn't really help you with what players who are not designated players are getting paid. You know, the functional member of the squad who's rotation, something like that, and is only getting $50,000 a year, you know, and it's not enough to keep them even from looking enviously at second division Scandinavian leagues and thinking, I could make a lot more money in, you know, the Tippeliga or whatever it is in Norway. And those are the things I think really affecting quality of play in the league more than getting more designated players in.
I think it'd be a poor move ahead of these CBA talks. I actually don't think the players' union would like it.
They would rather just see the money spent on a raised salary cap, maybe?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What about, I know the NBA has a system of, you know, the luxury tax where you can break your salary cap, but then you're basically giving a good chunk of that money to all of the other teams. Do you think that would work in the MLS, or do you think that that would, do you think that would help foster kind of growth there, or do you think, again, it would just be teams loading up on players that will make the league more unbalanced?
I think we're going to end up moving towards something. If I were to take a guess, I would guess we're going to move towards something like that, because the resources of ownership groups is so dramatically different, and we're not getting much money from television. You know, some people are making good money on attendance, but you know, it's not that much. And if you're the owners of Manchester City, what incentive do you have to come pour a bunch of money into a team that you can't build up and you can't get to participate with your other global products? You know, the Australian team they just bought, in Man City. So I think we're gonna wind up going towards something like that. Whether it will be a good thing or not, it depends on how they set it up. You certainly don't want the baseball setup, you know, where you've got two or three teams that can pour, you know, orders of magnitude more money than anybody else into salaries. But I don't see the money coming into MLS enough to level the playing field in the same way that you see in a league like the NFL that gets a huge amount of TV money and everybody's doing well, so you can keep a salary cap because ostensibly everybody can pay the same, you know, or everybody can pay enough money even if some owners are richer than others. It's not the crazy disparity that you see in MLS.
Now, I know the way they do it in the NBA is if you surpass the luxury tax for multiple years in a row, you have to pay like a repeater tax, which is like double or triple the amount that you would normally pay or something. And I think that would incentivize keeping under that salary cap at least for like, you know, one out of every 3 years or something. And that could be enough to ensure that parity still exists. It might not, though, because, I mean, what we're seeing in the NBA is this: the Russian owner Prokhorov is just pouring however much money into the Brooklyn Nets as possible, and he doesn't give a shit. So, yeah.
It's not really helping him on the court, though.
Yeah, they're getting better. They're getting better.
They're not that good, though.
They're inching towards 500.
Yeah.
They've almost not lost.
Yeah.
They'll make the playoffs because the East is awful, but yeah.
I think that we're also seeing a lot of growth in the MLS. I don't think it's quite as precarious a situation as it once was. I don't think we should, you know, look at losing the salary cap rules altogether, but I think you can look at certain ways of loosening them at this point, because most of the teams are well established now, and a lot of the teams, none of the newer teams coming into the league are kind of in danger of folding because they're doing a little better research, making sure they have the good teams coming in. So I think at this point, the league could look at ways to relax it. And I'm coming from Columbus, which is one of the, you know, teams with the least money in the league. And I think that you could find ways to relax the salary cap rules to bring more talent over without completely shutting out the smaller teams, I think. All right, guys, let's go ahead and close out the show. We'll do it like we always do with some bold predictions. Ian, you want to kick off our bold predictions?
Not really.
Let's do it. I know we never prepare for these. These are all coming off right off the top of our heads.
Here's my bold prediction. We were going to talk transfer rumors, and we didn't even talk about Jozy Altidore. I think it's a really bad idea, but I do think Jozy Altidore is going to come at least on loan back to New York before the World Cup starts.
So we got a bold prediction of Jozy to New York.
That is a bold prediction.
It is a bold prediction.
That's what you got.
I'm gonna stick with my prediction from last week, which still hasn't come true, but I think it will. Vancouver is gonna sign a designated player this week.
Continues to be a bold prediction.
Yeah, I know. We'll see if it actually happens.
Pete, what do you got for us?
Let's see. I guess I'll stick with my local, and we'll make a bold Sounders prediction that I think we're going to see an unexpected transfer come in this week. There's been some rumors of a trialist that was the name was withheld from the media, And the last time that happened, we ended up with Mauro Rosales. So I'm going to make a bold prediction that we are going to see an unexpected, let's go South American player come in the next week or two.
All right, and finally, my bold prediction for this season is that RFK Stadium will not collapse.
You got thinking a lot there, Chris.
Thank you guys for sticking with us throughout, and we will hopefully see you soon.